Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Connecting Faith. Thanks so much for joining us today. I'm Joe Bender, and we're going to talk mothers and daughters today. Everyone has a mother. Maybe you don't have a daughter, but everyone's got a mom, and maybe you're one of those women who claim that your mother is your very best friend. Or maybe you're a daughter who says that loving your mother is a bit of a chore. No matter where you are on the end of that perspective, we're going to just chat about that relationship, why it is so important, and what we can do to have a great relationship and get the most out of our relationships with our mothers and daughters. Well, my guest for today says that no matter your age, no matter your stage, even if your mother is no longer with us, that finding balance and perspective in those relationships with mom, well, that it's possible. And so we're here to offer some hope in that situation. And if you've got one of those great relationships with your mothers, well, we'd love to hear from you as well. Let me tell you about my guest for today, and we'll find some answers to those questions and some practical help as well. Dr. Linda Mintel is a national speaker and best-selling author of 16 books, including I Married You, Not Your Family, and the book we're going to be talking about today, which is I Love My Mother, But. So Dr. Linda appears regularly on lots of national television and radio shows. She provides wonderful content on her own website as well. In her general clinical practice, Dr. Linda specializes in marriage and family therapy and eating disorders. She and her family live in Virginia. Welcome, Dr. Linda.
Hey, it's great to be there. And I'm also on the Faith Radio Network. So I have a weekend show called the Dr. Linda Mintel Show where we talk about relationships. That's basically our focus, is how do we improve our relationships? How do we have better relationships? And certainly the relationship with our mothers is one of the most powerful bonds that we can have. And we need to really make sure that we're doing everything we can to make that relationship great as well.
I should have mentioned that, too. You have just a wonderful show on the weekends. In fact, I sat with my husband when we had some car time together, and we listened to one of your shows on the marriage relationship. So great content there as well. And we'll talk more about that too. Well, you know, every daughter really wants to be validated. And it seems like every daughter wants acceptance from her mom, unconditional love. And why is that bond so important?
Well, it's one of the most intimate bonds that we can have. When we think about it, growing up in our families, this is the place that we learn how to have a sense of who we are. It's the place where we learn to deal with conflict. It's a place we learn to regulate our emotions, to develop intimacy with other people. And we take all that learning with our parents and our siblings as well, and we take that and we apply that to our relationships later in life. So it's really the training ground for every relationship that we're going to have. And at the core of every relationship is this desire to be accepted by the other person, to be unconditionally loved by the other person, to be validated for who you are, to be listened to be understood. All of this is so important when we're talking about intimate relationships. And so that mother-daughter bond and the father-daughter bond, I wouldn't exclusively say this all applies just to moms. It also can be applied to dads and even to siblings when we talk about relationships. But that identification with your mother as a woman is very important because it tells you how to be a woman and it shows you the way to be a woman. And so we have to figure this out. The real goal here for every daughter is to figure out who she is as a separate person and yet have a relationship with her mom. And so that's what I see, Joe, in the therapy office, is I see a lot of women struggling with their relationship with their mothers because they're like, she's trying to control me, she's telling me what to do, you know, or she doesn't talk to me when I need her to, or sometimes she's just my friend and she's really not giving me advice. I mean, there's all kinds of things you hear from people. But the reason that that is so important is because we're always trying to figure out who we are in the context of this relationship with our moms. And that takes some work for most of us.
Mm. Well, it seems that we all have an expectation of how we think our mom is going to be when, you know, confronted with a certain situation, whether we're telling them good news or bad news or asking for help with something. And yet when that expectation isn't fulfilled the way we think, then it seems like that sets off just an array of emotions.
It really does. And expectations are so important, and we really have to look at them and decide, are they actually realistic? I remember when my kids were little, I had this favorite book that I read to them called Runaway Bunny. I don't know if you've ever heard of that
little
book.
Oh, yeah, I know that one.
But it's an adorable book. And I would read this book to my kids, and the story is basically about a little boy bunny who keeps running away from his mother. And so the mother is, wherever he runs to the hills, and the mother follows him and finds him. He runs to the ocean and gets on a boat, and the mother comes and finds him. And the message always is, wherever you go, I will find you. And I remember feeling very uneasy reading that to my kids. And I actually said at the end of the book, and when my kids were very little, I said, look, this bunny, this mama bunny, really represents God. Because God is the person who will always find you, always know what you need, always understand you, always be there when you need him to be there. Moms and dads, not so much all the time. We're imperfect. We're human. As a mom, I will miss it sometimes with my daughter and my son. You know, I won't always give them the best answer. Sometimes I lack wisdom myself. So these expectations that somehow our mothers are all-knowing, all-perfect, always there, can set us up to have a sense of disappointment a lot of times and feel let down by our moms. So we have to look really carefully at, are we expecting too much from them without really understanding that they're also a woman who is flawed and has her own issues perhaps and maybe didn't have the easiest life and is bringing some of those things into the relationship as well.
You paint such a lovely analogy in your book of how we as daughters don't tend to see the full picture of who our mom really is and was long before we came along. You said you were taking some photographs in Napa Valley and only realized afterward that you had this great panoramic shot available on your camera and you never used it. So you never saw the big picture. And you write that daughters can be like inexperienced photographers. Sometimes we have trouble seeing the big picture when it comes to dealing with our mom. We tend to only see a narrow snapshot of mom's life, just the part that involves us. We forget that she is a complex woman shaped by many forces. Why is that perspective and maybe some empathy so important for us as daughters to understand our moms a little bit better?
Well, what that does is when you begin to understand her as a woman who grew up in a certain time with maybe certain cultural expectations, when you begin to realize the forces that were maybe operating against her or maybe the difficult family that she might have grown up in, what it does is it begins to give you some empathy for that person. So you don't just see her as someone who is there for you to respond to every single need that you have. Now, that's important. As a mom, I always want to respond to the needs of my children. So I'm not saying that that's not an important thing, but as my children get older and they begin to see me as a flawed person, because that's what happens when they get a little bit older, they start to see the flaws in their mom and their dads, and they think, wow, these wonderful people are not so perfect. But when you begin to understand who they are in a much more complex sense, and you do this by just sitting down with your parents and asking them about their early life and what it was like and, you know, how did they respond to difficulty and what forces were operating in their lives? What did they have to overcome? You know, when I had a brother who was killed by a terrorist bomb, and it was a very difficult time for my family when that happened, but my mom really, really had a hard time with that. And not that the rest of us didn't, but it really affected her for a long time. And knowing that that loss was impacting her in the way it was helped me give some empathy and understanding when maybe she wasn't always quite as available to me as I wanted her to be during that time. So I think it's important to think about what happens to a family. What did your mom experience, and how are even the present day stresses and difficulties of life affecting her now? And maybe those have something to do with why she isn't always the perfect person you want her to be.
Hmm. Such good words. You know, why does it seem like mothers and daughters can kind of butt heads like no other people on the planet?
Yeah, I used to have this coffee mug in my office, in my therapy office, and it was a picture of a woman just shrieking with her hair standing up, you know, and it said, "Ah, I am my mother." And I think that kind of explains what it is. There's such a strong identification with our moms, and in this sort of battle for trying to figure out who I am apart from her, I'm so much like her, but I'm also different. And that whole figuring that thing out just creates a struggle in so many times for the daughter, because at times we want to be like her, at other times we see parts of her in us that maybe we don't like so much. And so the real work is figuring out what parts of our mom we want to keep, what parts we might want to work on, maybe the parts that we want to change, but always recognizing that there are parts of us that are very much like her. And I know, like in my own mother-daughter relationship, my mom was a very strong woman. She was very confident. She was opinionated. She was a manager. And she was strong. And I'm very strong and opinionated and that type of person. So it's easy to see how sometimes we could butt heads in that regard, because we were very similar in our personalities that way. And when you have kids, one of the things that you really begin to see is that some kids get along easier with one parent than another parent. And it just has a lot to do with temperament and personality and identification and how much we might be like that parent versus how much we might be sort of a different type that maybe the parent doesn't quite know what to do as easy sometimes with one kid versus another child, if we're honest.
Isn't that true? My brother and I were just having a conversation last summer about our parents, and we had the exact opposite opinion on which parent was the one who was more critical and which was the parent who was more encouraging. And we had the exact opposite thoughts on those things. And I couldn't believe it. I just sat there and thought, well, wow, my experience was totally different than yours. And maybe our parents treated us differently, or maybe that's just how we received it.
You know, sometimes what happens, I look at my own family, and I think my mother identified a lot more with my brother, who was the middle child, because she was a middle child. And so whenever there would be like arguments in the home with the siblings and the kids, the middle child would always sort of get the pass. And as I got older, I realized, you know, that was her place in the family. And the more we talked about it when she was older, she said, you know, I always felt for him because that was the position I was in as a child. And so I could see sometimes how he was being sort of beaten up by the oldest and the youngest child. You know, they were sort of coming against him sometimes, and he was the one caught in the middle. So all of those kinds of things like that, you know, impact the way parents deal with their children. So the more we can understand the family dynamics, the more we can understand who our parents are, and the more we can kind of understand who we are in that process. Again, our goal is always to have a great bond with our parents, to be securely attached in our relationships with them, to have this intimate relationship with them. But in that process, we always have to figure out, who am I in the middle of that? And one of the reasons it gets so tricky for women is because we have these emotional reactions that we sometimes don't understand, and we just get upset and we get mad, and we have to go back and kind of look at those and say, okay, what was that about? I remember when I was training with these family therapists who were my mentors, they would say to me, you know when you've made it in the relationship with your mother, when you can take any position and not have this intense emotional feeling about it. So without getting angry, highly defensive, I can voice my own opinion and not feel like I have to be defensive. And I thought that was such a good marker as I got older, trying to work on my own regulation of my emotions, trying to listen more carefully, trying to understand that person who birthed me and brought me into the world and made a creative, you know, was a creative person, but made huge sacrifice in her life for me. That always helped me to understand my job is to find my voice, but not be defensive in the process and continue to have that relationship with her.
Very wise words from Dr. Linda Mental. We're talking about her book today, I Love My Mother, But. We're going to talk about what if you do have a bit of a tumultuous relationship with your mother, what steps can you take to make that relationship more whole? We'll talk about that when we return on Connecting Faith. to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Thanks for joining me today, talking to Dr. Linda Mintel today. Linda's a national speaker and best-selling author. She's written a great book called I Love My Mother, But, just talking about the mother-daughter relationship, why it can be so great and why it can be so challenging. So, Linda, you have some great tips in your book and just some wonderful questions to work through. If a woman may be struggling with her relationship with her mother, how can a woman start working through her relationship with her mom?
Well, there's a real basic relationship principle that we have to apply to every relationship, and that is that we cannot control what other people do to us, but we can control how we respond to those things. So I think when we're talking about mothers and daughters, it's really important to think about maybe your mom did some things to you that were hurtful or wounding or upsetting. Maybe you didn't feel like you got the validation you needed. Maybe you feel that she's critical or controlling, or maybe you feel like at times she neglects you or doesn't understand who you are as a person. You can't control those things, but you can control how you react to those things. So the very first place to start is to always try to have a conversation with your mom about the areas that you feel hurt in. So if you feel like there's something there that is really impinging on the relationship and is really making that relationship difficult, one of the things I see, Joe, is that a lot of women will just go, well, forget it. You know, I don't need my mom. I don't want to have anything to do with her. And they think that this is a step of independence to just say, I'm going to just get away from my mom and live my own life. The problem with that strategy is it doesn't work. Because whenever you run into difficulties in other relationships that involve problems, you're going to respond the same way. You're just going to want to flee because you don't know how to deal with conflict and problems and how to bring them up. So one of the things I always tell people is at least try to start talking about it. And you don't talk about it by accusing her of things. You talk about it by saying how certain things have impacted you and the perceptions that you have or the way that you feel about something. Now, not all moms will be wonderful at responding to that, but you can only control the part that you're saying. So I always tell women, work on how you say it. You know, start soft. Use an I statement. This is how I feel, or this is what I see. Maybe I'm not exactly right, but this is how I have seen it. And to always couch it in terms of, I want to talk about this issue because I want our relationship to be better. I want us to be able to do this, to talk to each other, to feel good with each other, and to bring up problems when they come up. And that isn't always easy for us to do, but it's really important as a first step.
Well, and you say that's one of the first steps to coming to the conclusion that maybe we need to forgive our moms for something they did or maybe didn't do. How do we work toward that step? Because that seems like an enormous step for someone who's maybe had a difficult time with their mother growing up.
It is, and forgiveness is a choice. It really is. Now, when you look at it scripturally, and I've written a book on anger and unforgiveness, so I really studied this. And when you look at the scriptures, it's really a commandment that we forgive one another. It's not something that God says if you feel like it, if that person deserved it. I mean, think about it. Jesus forgave us when we didn't deserve it. So the model here from the Christian perspective is we are to forgive. We don't wait for the other person to come to us. And I have a line in the book that I've quoted many times where when there's problems between two people and the daughter or the mother is saying, well, you know what? She hurt me, so it's up to her to come and get me. I'm going to wait till she comes to me. You know, the line in the book is only children fight about who goes first. So as adults, you know, we don't wait. The scripture is really clear. If we have been offended or we have offended someone, we go to that person and we bring it up. And so you have to choose forgiveness. And that doesn't mean that emotionally you just feel great when you do it. It really a lot of times is a process. When we've been very hurt by anyone, and particularly our moms, we can choose and we can engage our will and we can say, I choose to forgive this person. And we might have to wake up every day and say, I choose to forgive her because she may be continuing to hurt us. And that's where we have to learn to set boundaries and learn how to be able to say, this is hurtful, I need you to stop, or I'm going to hang up the phone if you continue to do this, et cetera. But we need to choose that forgiveness. And Scripture says we may have to do that over and over again. And the thing we need to think about with forgiveness is that it's an individual act. So reconciliation takes two, but forgiveness takes one. And as we forgive others, then we open up that spiritual blessing in our lives. And I could do a whole half hour on the connection between unforgiveness and physical health and emotional health, but certainly from a spiritual health, we have got to forgive in order to allow the Holy Spirit to continue to move in our lives and to change us more into the likes of Christ. So we have to be very careful to understand that forgiveness is individual. It's a gift you give to yourself and a gift you give to other people. And it's something that we are commanded to do by Scripture. But the good news is as we do it, it helps us feel better and it lifts the burden and it opens up the gate for reconciliation.
What if there are women listening here today? We just have a couple minutes left, but I'd really like to get to this, Linda. If their mothers are no longer with them, but they still feel like they haven't forgiven their mom for whatever it was that had hurt them.
Yeah, I would tell them to just, I've done this several times with clients and patients. I would just say, make a list of the things that you're still holding on to that were very hurtful to you. And again, I want to stress, Joe, that when you forgive someone, you're not saying that what they did didn't hurt you tremendously. It isn't a pass. You're forgiving them because they hurt you tremendously. So it doesn't minimize or condone what anybody did to you. That's not what forgiveness does. So I would make a list, and I would take each one of those things, and I would pray over each one of those, and I would ask the Lord just to help you with each one of those issues and choose to forgive your mom, even if she's not with you anymore, for the things that have happened, and try to find then any part of your mom, any experience, any memory, anything that was joyful, and try to write that down and to focus on the parts of her that maybe were positive, because no one is all good or all bad. There are parts of goodness in all of us. So focus on those parts that were good. Try to refocus on the positives of what your mom gave you, letting go of those things from the past so that you can move on and you can have a healthy relationship with your children. If you don't do this, you get stuck with your own children, and it tends to repeat generations.
Hmm. Well, what if somebody's listening and they say, but wait a minute, she doesn't know my mom. What do you say to those people?
I probably do know your mom because I've been a therapist for 25 years, so I've probably seen her at least once in therapy. And again, I mean, I've worked with women who have had sexual abuse from their moms, women whose moms have, given them to men in the middle of a drug rant, all kinds of things that have just been horrendous that have happened to them, angry, critical, verbally abusive moms. And again, we can't control what they do to us, but we can control how we respond. So this is your choice. Exercise that forgiveness. Pray for her and then move on with your life and try to do what you can to restore that relationship.
Well, Dr. Linda Mental, we just thank you so much for taking some time to talk about your book, I Love My Mother, But. You can listen to Dr. Linda Mental on Saturdays here on the Faith Radio Network at 10:30 in the morning. I highly recommend it. Lots of relationship help. And Dr. Linda, just thanks so much for writing this book for all mothers and daughters.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
Your baby fly. You've given me everything that I will need to make it through this crazy thing called life.
Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. Today we're talking about mothers and daughters. I love that song. It just makes me think about saying goodbye to my children once I send them off to college, and you kind of just think and hope that everything you've taught them is going to help them get through the following years. But what I found is I still continue to call my mom for a lot of things, and I'm almost 50 years old. So it seems like that bond is still a very big part of most of our lives with mothers and daughters. And we're just kind of talking about why that is so and why it can also be a very tumultuous time for some moms and daughters when they've gone through some painful experiences as well. We were talking with Dr. Linda Mintel over the last half hour about her book, I Love My Mother, But, and we received some practical help just to get the most out of our mother-daughter relationship. And I'm thrilled right now to be able to have a licensed marriage and family therapist join us to talk a little bit more about why this relationship is so important and how we can make the most of it as well. Let me introduce my guest for this half hour. Stephanie Rossing is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She's the founder of Core Restore Counseling. She received her MA in marriage and family therapy from Bethel Seminary, and she's worked with adolescents and families in schools, correctional facilities, home-based and church settings for over 17 years. Stephanie utilizes a holistic, strengths-based approach to therapy, incorporating mind, body, and soul care. Her special interests include women's issues, adolescent girls, trauma, and spiritual growth. Welcome, Stephanie.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. And now we get to kind of get into the meat of some of the overarching themes that we talked about over the last half hour. So are there a lot of people who come to you about this mother-daughter kind of relationship bond, or maybe just in therapy? Do you find yourself moving toward that to find out why a particular person may be feeling a particular way?
Constantly. And I think it's really interesting. In our culture, we're more accustomed to talking about father wounds. Mm-hmm. But when you're in the heart of therapy with any client, regardless of age, usually the mom issue ends up being a linchpin. And the idea that people are more familiar with dad wounds. Dad had to work a lot. Maybe dads tend to have less language for their emotions, so they might disengage a bit with their daughters. They've never been teenage girls, so sometimes they just don't get that. But for moms, we expect that nurture and comfort to just be there. And that's part of the DNA of mom. But a lot of mamas had wounds. And so the idea and the lie that the enemy really plants deeply in a lot of women, regardless of age, is if my mom can't accept me and unconditionally love me, then who possibly could?
And that feeling that of not being accepted or not being loved unconditionally can start at a very early age and then continue throughout all of adulthood, correct?
Absolutely. Dr. Mintel did a great job of just talking about bringing issues into the light. Mm-hmm. When we have things in secret, I have two adolescent girls. They're continually making things up in their head that when they come out, I go, where did that come from? So, you know, starting at a young age, if we can just start to put things in the light. Mm-hmm. I mean, she just said talking. And I do like the phrase putting in the light because the enemy can't get a hold of it the same way.
Sure.
When it's out in the open.
When it's in our head and then we're thinking of these terrible scenarios. And if we would have just said, Mom, I feel like you thought this or said this or are thinking this. And in most cases, our mom might say, what?
Yeah.
I'm not thinking that at all about you.
Yeah, particularly with adolescents. But of course, unchallenged, those things just go into adulthood with us.
Right.
And every thought, every emotion has a chemical charge, it has an energy charge to it. So they literally do take root inside of us.
Well, one of the things Dr. Mintel wrote about that I didn't have a chance to ask her about is that some of us can find little pieces of our mom that are part of us, and then we have to decide, do I want to keep that? Is that a positive trait that I have of my mom, or is that something I'd kind of like to work out? What's that process like, and how would you suggest someone even goes through figuring that out?
Oh, boy, that's a complicated one. Well, Dr. Mintel did a nice job in the book, I thought, of talking really robustly about finding your voice. Mm-hmm. So, you know, taking in things mom has taught us, more importantly, showed us by example, incorporating some and leaving some behind, but recognizing that it's important that we identify who we are and begin to voice that and be able to stand in that. Like she said, without defensiveness or guilt, that's a real measuring stick.
But even bringing those things up must be incredibly difficult. I mean, I'm thinking about even myself. I consider myself a pretty strong, kind of forceful, say what I think, opinionated person. And yet having to have a conversation with my mother about something that I feel she said or did, I don't even know where to start with that. How does a person, especially if they're an adult woman wanting to have a conversation with their mother about something from a long time ago, how do they even begin that conversation?
Well, I think it starts in our hearts, you know, assuming the best, not assuming the worst, understanding our moms in context. Mm-hmm. Linda talked a lot about empathy. I also think about skill deficits. Parents, we have lots of skill deficits, but it doesn't mean we don't care or that we had an intention to be unloving. So I think to start the dialogue, just a lot of validation. Validation doesn't mean that we agree. It means that we can speak to somebody that they have a right to think and feel how they do, and that we have a right to think and feel differently. But it's very, if someone feels validated, they stop repeating themselves, which is, of course, a common mother-daughter complaint. Some would call it nagging, but if moms are repeating themselves, typically they don't feel heard. Hmm. Well into adulthood. So if we can validate what we think is the usually fear behind that, sure, things start to resolve.
Well, and even finding time to be able to have those conversations. I mean, we live these lives that are hurried and busy, and maybe we only see our mothers two or three times a year, and it's hard to have that kind of conversation. What about like writing things down first or letting them know maybe what we'd like to talk about? Is that something you'd recommend?
Absolutely. I mean, things come out much more clearly. It's giving somebody the opportunity to think ahead of time. Nobody likes to be surprised. We tend to react when we're surprised. So even just priming the pump that way and writing an email, a text even, just to say, hey, these are some things I'd like to put in the light. I also think, too, we have to sit with ourselves, and we tend not to do that. What I notice a lot, especially here in Minnesota, is the avoiding. And avoiding isn't neutral. I think that's such a lie of the enemy. Avoiding isn't neutral. When we avoid, our triggers are still there, and they're just going to blindside us just as strongly, if not stronger, the next time around, when really God wants to bring light into those and bring truth into those misperceptions. And it literally changes our brain wiring. And then we don't have as strong of a trigger the next time. So just to sit with ourselves and listen to our emotions. First of all, we have to just pay attention to what information is in those feelings. If we don't pay attention to the emotions, we miss the need. We miss the information that's in there. So I'm a big advocate for just let me sit with myself, talk to God about this. What are my emotions telling me? Mm. They're telling me something I need to know, and this information is going to help me grow and change. And if I ignore the information, I also can't dialogue very well.
Sure.
With mom.
Sure. You know, and Dr. Linda said that if we take that approach of avoiding, of walking away, of not having those conversations that are necessary, that we tend to take that same approach with many of the other relationships that we have, even with our own children, whether they're daughters or sons or our friends or our husbands. Do you find that to be true as well? And how do you help people to get beyond that?
Oh, so true. So true. Avoidance doesn't build confidence. It builds all I can do is run away. Mm-hmm. So not only do our triggers fire usually more strongly the next time that triggers hit, but we don't have the interpersonal confidence to go, hey, God got us through this last time. We actually both had misperceptions that got cleared up. When we put it in the light, we get confidence. Also, that information, when we're teaching younger kids, adolescent girls, you know, to listen to their emotions, they learn at a young age then, pay attention. These are like lights on the dashboard in the car. If we don't pay attention, important things are going to run dry or implode. And that is true in any relationship across the board.
Well, today I'm talking with licensed marriage and family therapist Stephanie Rossi, and we're talking about that mother and daughter relationship and how that relationship affects so many of our other relationships. What God has done that's created such a special bond between mothers and daughters and how we can really nurture that. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back to talk with Stephanie a little bit more about that mother-daughter bond that we all have. If you have a story you'd like to share or maybe something positive that has happened, if you've had those kinds of conversations with your mom and they've worked, well, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you have a question for Stephanie, feel free to call in and we will be able to get that question answered as well. 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. Hope to hear from you.
Yeah.
the bumper music would be these sweet little songs about mothers and daughters. I did not come up with that one, Ted.
Lenny Kravitz wasn't on your list.
When I think mothers and daughters and bonding, Kravitz does not come to my head, but that was great.
All right, we'll get it right when we actually do this.
Perfectly fitting. Perfectly fitting. Well, we're talking about mothers and daughters and just that relationship that can be very strong, but also a little bit tumultuous for some. So we're talking about why that's so important. And if you have an experience with your mom that really created some painful thoughts in your head or in your life, how do we get beyond that? We chatted with Dr. Linda Mintel about that in the last half hour, and now we're chatting with licensed marriage and family therapist Stephanie Rossing just about why is forgiveness so important. And one of the reasons that both have mentioned why forgiveness is so important is because it starts on that process to healing. What is it that happens? Why is healing such a good process for us to go through?
Oh, wow. Well, it kind of starts with that forgiveness piece. Some of my mentors have really taught me over their years of ministry that forgiveness is maybe the enemy's number one tactic. There's actually legal access given to the enemy to harass us when we don't forgive, and Jesus commands it. So when we choose that with our will and we submit our feelings, our emotions, the struggles, God meets us in our unbelief. He meets us in our difficulty. He honors our will. And working with a lot of trauma survivors, both what we call big T traumas and little T traumas, which might be smaller but kind of ongoing over time, it can be exceedingly difficult to forgive some heinous, heinous things. But when people engage their will to do that, the cleansing that happens, the freedom that happens on a spiritual level, it can't be measured. And Jesus commands it because it frees us. And otherwise, the enemy does have access, and it does free our relationships, too. Even if I am the only one that changes through that forgiveness, we kind of operate in a dance with our relationships, family or otherwise. And so if one person changes their dance step, it changes the whole thing.
Well, and that's another question I was thinking just as I was reading and thinking about this subject is, what if you decide that, well, no matter what it is that my mother did or didn't do and reasons that I feel I can hold a grudge against her, forgiving her is an action that we might do, but what if she doesn't want to be forgiven or engage in that conversation or really accept that at all? What is a daughter or anyone who's been the victim of abuse or neglect or anything more serious, what do you suggest that they do if they don't feel like they're getting the reaction that it is that they wanted?
I think we have to start with our expectation of the forgiveness process being mostly with God. We rarely get the response we're hoping for from the person we're sitting with, and a lot of people don't get to be face-to-face with that person if they're gone, passed away or just not in the proximity. So letting that forgiveness be whole with God. Also, in terms of the relationship, again, just that bigger empathy and grace for it's a process. And we have to have faith in God in the process, not have an expectation that this person will respond immediately, but really just trust that to God. Often over time, people will come back around, whether they actually admit it with their words or not. You'll see behavioral change because they feel forgiven. They feel those strings cut. Everyone responds well to freedom.
Well, and it seems that that process is not going to be a one-time kind of conversation, that it may take weeks, months, years for that to really conclude. But in that process, there are still good things happening, correct?
Oh, absolutely. You asked me one of my favorite things to talk about, and it is that process of good things are happening. I mentioned earlier that every thought, every feeling we have has a chemical and an energy charge, and those are stored in us. And in the psychological community, more importantly, as people of faith, we're learning about God's ability to heal the neurology of how painful emotions are stored and how they trigger in the body. And I couldn't be more excited. I mean, I could go on for days, literally, about how I get to see God heal people's wiring. And so, you know, when we start to live not from our reactionary self, which is our brainstem, kind of our fight, flight, freeze, or fall asleep, but we start to live from our prefrontal cortex, those pathways heal. That's our core values place. That's our best decision making. That's our truest self in operation. And when we hide, we actually don't form that part of the brain correctly. It doesn't heal as fast as it could. One of the best ways to heal it is joy and humor. It's the fastest healing part of the brain up in that right prefrontal cortex. So just having some humor and some grace and some forgiveness literally brings neurological healing. And I like to use the metaphor of Dr. Caroline Leaf, who's a Christian neuroscientist. She also uses this, that we have pathways in our brain when we have anxiety fire off and fire off and fire off, or sadness, shame. They become super pathways, super highways, if you will, in the brain. And they just fire deeply and strongly. And those are our triggers. And God creates these exit ramps and these detours. And when we literally, you know, take that to the Lord, we let him heal and create more pathways of peace and joy and rest. Those become off ramps in the brain, and those get strengthened. And then we don't have that pull anymore. And those triggers just don't fire like they used to. So to see that happening in my office every day is a delight beyond imagination. It's really a gift.
So what happens physiologically if people decide, I'm not going to deal with this problem? It just is what it is, and they just kind of write it off as a relationship that's not going to be strong.
You know, Joe, there's a lot I could say about that, but it will keep firing off. And it's kind of like, I use an analogy of, to not deal with these things is like about as effective as trying to hold a beach ball underwater. Mm-hmm. You know, we may be successful for a short time, but it's going to come flying out, probably at some unsuspecting, innocent person, and it's not going to look pretty. What we know from neuroscience, and the Christian community has really come a long way in incorporating this, is that not only does every thought and every feeling have a chemical and an energy charge, but they kind of glom together in the brain. And so any abandonment goes together, any fear, terror. And when we heal one part of that at the core, particularly those early memories that take up more of our brain real estate, the healing goes through the whole web.
Mm.
And so if we don't deal with them, they're still firing off. And one thing I really like to encourage people with is our memories and this abundant life we're trying to live. If we have resentments that we're holding on to, if we have sort of hidden emotions like, you know, unchecked anxiety, shame, those things actually store into those memories. So we could have a wedding day, for instance, joyous occasion, and we want to be fully present and alive for that. But if anxiety and shame are kicking, our memories are actually coded by the emotions we were feeling at the time of the event. So it actually totally disrupts how we live our life, because those memories are now stored with those things attached. And God can go in and heal those. And that is a beautiful thing. We literally have a transformation of our own memories and our own experiences happen.
Well, and he tells us to take every thought captive. How do you give people tactics on how exactly to do that?
Oh, that's about my favorite question. Thank
Yay.
You. I see a lot of believers. I see a lot of unbelievers. But common practice out there that a lot of people have experienced in counseling is kind of cognitive behavioral. If you just take your thoughts captive, you know, everything will correct itself. And what we're finding from research across the board is that, you know, as we all know, when we have a trigger, it's usually kind of pre-thought. It's just on in a nanosecond in the body. So we have neurology that's firing even before our cognitions kick in. And so it's a lot easier to take thoughts captive to Christ if our body isn't firing off emergency, anxiety, terror, shame. So I think the Christian community is learning to not put the cart before the horse, to actually let the peace of God and the rest of God become new pathways, reinforce those pathways. Once those are there, we can go revisit traumatic events, see those heal. People can actually feel like they have an exit ramp in their brain. And it's a lot easier to take thoughts captive to Christ when we're not sort of weighed down or burdened by all those other things firing.
I'm guessing that exhaustion and discouragement has a lot to do with whether or not you're able to do that as well. If people are exhausted, they're discouraged, and then they come up against a negative feeling or emotion, their ability to take those thoughts captive must be very, very low versus when we're filled up by our relationships, by scripture, by our relationship with God. It seems like it might be a little bit easier to then come to a thought that we could take captive and maybe change around to something positive.
Yes, that is so true, because the superhighway is getting reinforced, even if we're not aware that it is. So when we catch things early and we just pay attention to our feelings and what the information is inside of those, we're just allowing God's healing in that moment. And then no negatives can stockpile. We have a whole new pathway that goes, God's got me. We literally have peace and rest and joy chemistry in our body. And, that's very empowering, because that builds so much faster. And he who is in us is stronger than he who is in the world. So the rate at which we heal is much faster, exponentially faster than how long the trauma took or those overwhelming life events. So that's exciting and encouraging for us when we think, oh, this took me 40 years to get to. Is it going to take me another 40 years? Absolutely not. God is so huge. And all we need to do is submit ourselves honestly to him.
It's like the opposite of weight loss. When you say, I want to lose 40 pounds, it's taken me 40 years to get the 40 pounds. I'd like to lose it next week. And this is the opposite.
Good news.
With God, all things are possible. And so he can do immeasurably more than we would ask or imagine. Well, this, I know we're coming to a close, but I just want to make sure that people know, if you're thinking, gosh, I really would like to have a conversation with my mom about something that's been bothering me, or just even if it's something really great, the best time to do that would not be when you're upset about something, correct, Stephanie?
Correct.
Maybe we should write those things down, pray over them, ask God for his support, and then schedule a time to maybe have a conversation.
Sit with yourself first, get into a place of grace, being aware of accepting your own limitations. We have so much misplaced guilt and all these things as mother and daughters. And so if we can accept our own limitations, the grace we've been given, really, just let that expand in us before we have a conversation with mom, that goes much better. And I like to leave listeners with three key words. Almost my first day at Bethel Seminary, my favorite professor said, if you take anything out of your whole seminary education on marriage and family studies, I want you to remember three words. And I found it to be very true over 17 years of practice. And the words are hear the fear. Hear the fear. So if we can hear the fear behind someone's intensity, because usually anger is just a lot of intensity. It's a lot of passion. And that's a good thing. Anger comes from hurt and fear. And so if we can get to that hurt and fear and speak truth to that and speak gently to that, anger just dissolves like mist. And these grudges and these burdens and these things that we've been striving and trying so hard to do, they just become much easier if we hear the fear and address the fear.
It really is about being heard, isn't it? Whether you're the mother or whether you're the daughter, they both want to be heard.
So important. I would say the other thing that's key is just see the people you're with, hear them and see them. I mean, see beyond their behavior, see beyond their reactions, see the fear kick in, speak to it, see who God really made them to be, their Ephesians 2:10 self underneath the frustrating behavior.
Well, and it's funny, when I was reading about kind of getting to know your mom's background, I was thinking to myself, my kids have no idea what happens between the hours of 8:30 in the morning and 2:30 in the afternoon, what has transpired in my life. And nor do they ask, because they're children. But it just was such a really good reminder for me to think about what has transpired in a mother's life long before we came along, so that we can really help to bridge that gap of understanding. So love that piece of advice. What's your last piece of advice for us?
Live in the grace and the abundant, outstanding love that God has for us, and then we'll be able to pay that forward into our relationships.
Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for joining us today. Stephanie Rossi, licensed marriage and family therapist, and we've just been talking about mother-daughter relationships. I hope that you listened and heard something that was helpful to you in your own relationship with your mother or with your daughter. We'll be talking more about relationships. And again, you can catch Dr. Linda Mindel at 10:30 in the morning on Saturdays here on the Faith Radio Network. And otherwise, just listen to Connecting Faith. If you want to get a podcast of this show, you can go to myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith. Have a great day.